Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming out. My name is Asma Malik, and I'm a journalism professor at Ryerson University, and it's my pleasure to be here this afternoon with Guy Delisle to talk about his new book, Hostage. But first, there's a few things we need to get out of the way. I'd like to thank a few key people who make TCAF such a success. Programming at TCAF is sponsored by Seneca College's Faculty of Communication, Art, and Design. And TCAF would also like to thank presenting sponsors The Beguiling and Toronto Public Library. Also thanks to media sponsor Now Magazine. And thanks to all of you for coming out. Just by way of intro, Guy Delisle has become one of the most well-known cartoonists in the world with his best-selling travelogues about everyday life in faraway and complex countries. Pyongyang, Burma Chronicles, Jerusalem. His work has offered thousands of people an intimate look at daily life in places they will never see. With his new book, Hostage, he's describing not a place at this time, but actually a situation that most of us would not find ourselves in. Just by way of background and intro, in 1997, Médecins Sans Frontières employee Christophe André was kidnapped and held for over 100 days in Chechnya before escaping through a countryside where he couldn't speak the language. Drawn from interviews with André and first recorded almost 15 years ago, is that right?
Yeah, I met Christophe in 2001, I think.
Okay. Yeah, it's a powerful account of life under imprisonment, and you just keep reading it to see how it's going to end. It's a unique book in the sense that the hero spends 300 of the 430 pages in chained to a radiator. And as Sarah Glidden said, for a book about a man trapped in the corner of a room, it should not be exhilarating, but somehow you managed to create just that. So just to get started to talk about Christophe André's story, the first mention of him is in your book Shenzhen when you're sort of talking about your memory, sort of hearing about his story. Can you talk about what drew you to him and why you decided to write this book?
Mm-hmm. Well, I read Christophe André's story on the newspaper, like a lot of people. And at the time, there was a lot of people who were kidnapped, and some of them came back home, and it was obvious that it was very difficult to come back home from a kidnapping. I remember one of them, actually, his name is Brice Flotio, commit suicide afterwards, so I felt very bad for him. And just right after, there was that story of Christophe who came back, and like he said in that article, he just felt he felt like he in the position of the football player that scored the last goal and wins the match. So I thought, well, what a great way to come back from such a difficult experience as a kidnapping. I've always been fascinated by kidnappings, and what do you do, how do you cope? But most of the people, they don't want to talk about that when they come back, so they just say, well, it's very long, but there's not much to say. So I mentioned Christophe's story when I was in China in my first book. I was putting a lot of details in that book, and that was in my mind when I was there. And I got a chance to meet him because I was visiting a friend at Doctors Without Borders. She said, well, you know, Christophe, that you talk in your book is here, and maybe he can come and join us for dinner. So I started asking him a few questions, thinking that he's not going to want to talk about that. It's probably a traumatic experience. But like he says, the best therapy for kidnapping is to escape. And he feels actually quite good about that. So he told us the whole story. I remember being there with my friend and listening to him, all the details. And we were just going like, wow, this is so crazy. Because the article was very short, and so for an hour he just told us the whole story. And I said right away, yeah, that would be great to do a comic with that. And he said, sure, why not? And yeah, that's how it started.
So how long did you actually sit with him for the recording?
And then after that, yeah, I think in 2003, I went to his place, and we spent like half a day, like a long afternoon, to record. I had a document from the NGO to keep a trace of that that they did right after, and from that I was asking him a lot of questions, going back through all the details I can think of, because when you know you're going to have to draw the whole thing, you ask like millions of questions: what the room looked like, what these guys looked like, what the bowl of soup looked like when he was there. He says, I don't know what the bowl of soup looks like, I forgot. So, it's a lot of questions.
So would you draw that? Like, draw it for him, say, does it look like this, or does it look like this? Like, how did you kind of get those little details?
Well, since it's not very important, so I just draw it like a kind of a Chinese bowl of soup, which is probably not what they have in Chechnya, but I'm not sure what they have in Chechnya as far as utensil goes.
What was he like in terms of when he was recounting his story? Was he detached, or was he very kind of emotional, or what was that experience like?
He was detached, yeah. He was telling that like almost an action story and being detained there. He was describing these guys because he was kidnapped by, there were probably former military people to go secretly through the border. And like he says, that's the first time I cross a border secretly with no papers, no passport. And then he was put there in the house where you had these two, three guys feeding him. I guess they were part of the family. That's how it works there. It's very clanic and family oriented. So they were just feeding him. They were not really bad people. He was not hurt. He was not. Nothing happened to him physically. They were just feeding him, and that's all.
And in terms of the process of sort of taking the recording and getting the details from him and the full story, I read that it was a very painstaking process to write the book. Can you talk a little bit about how you approached it?
Well, yeah, it took me 15 years to do because I was postponing it. I was going just after I met Christophe, I went in North Korea, so I did that book on Pyongyang. And then after that, we were going away. So when I was away, it was hard to work on the book because I needed to have Christophe to sometimes giving a phone call and have a detail. So I was working on the traveling books, and we finished doing that. And so I realized that, wow, 15 years passed. And I did a first version in 2003, and I didn't like it when I came back to the book like a year after, because I was still working in animation to make a living when I was doing these books. So that's kind of a third version, because I did like a whole writing of the book at one point and it didn't work either. So yeah, this book, I took everything that happened that Christophe told me, all the details for me, they were all very interesting, and I wanted to put all that in the book, and I did a chronological order of all the details, and I put that into the 3 months and a half he was there captive, and of course he escapes as well. So I was following that line of action, and I would do every day one page and kind of follow almost the everyday time that he was there, because I really wanted to explain the time, because he told me, at first he thought he would be there just for weekend, like he thought, well, I'll be back to work on Monday or Tuesday and everything's going to be forgotten. But then Monday, Tuesday comes, and then they go, and then he's still there, and then a week, and then 2 weeks, and then you start to think in months, and then you go crazy, because that's very, psychologically, it's very hard, because then you think, well, Christmas, I'm not going to spend Christmas here, that's very depressing. So I wanted to not just mention it, because you can always say, well, 2 weeks later, and then you see Christophe, who's more tired, his beard is a bit grown a bit more. But that was not enough for me. I wanted to have an immersive type of book, of story, so that the reader feels the time. That's why there's so many pages. Like the first day is very long, and because he was thinking, well, after one day I'll be out. And then the first week is very long. So that's why there's so many pages. I wanted the reader to turn the page, but not escape as easily as that. So they feel that they're stuck there.
Well, to that point, there's something very cinematic about the book in terms of you see different perspectives of Christophe, like in the room where he's chained to the radiator. You sort of see him from up high, and then you see his wrist. How did you play with it? Was that something very conscious that you played with that perspective throughout those pages?
Yeah, I do the text in the morning. I prepare my page, and then I try to imagine what would fit with the text, and then I draw a little sketch quickly, and sometimes this doesn't work for some reason that I cannot really explain. And I didn't try to put lots of special effects, close-ups, because from my previous reading of comic books, I've realized that if you put a lot of effects, it looks more like a Hollywood film, and then you get far away from a real-life story. So the kidnapping is not action-oriented at all. It's very subdued. There's one point of view from above, and that's all. And because the reality is so strong that you don't want to lose that, and if you put lots of effects, you kind of lose that it's actually a real story. So I've kept the drawing kind of almost in the background because the story is so strong that I wanted the story narratively be there all the time, very strongly.
In terms of how you captured his captors, like in terms of how you captured them on the page, what kind of details were you hoping to write? There's one capture that he calls Thierry Mandier after the character in Les Misérables, and he kind of has that, obviously, that Stockholm sort of syndrome. He's in with them all the time, and they're his world essentially.
Yeah.
How did you translate them to the page? What were your sort of big, what were the big identifying sort of characteristics of them that you wanted to keep in the book?
I asked him a lot of details about these two guys, and then I was drawing 50 pages, and then he told me actually they were a bit younger than that. But I said, well, Christophe, I've done 50 pages, I'm not going to redraw them all. So that was not such an important detail, so I didn't change that, because sometimes it was more important, so I was changing stuff that he was saying. He was very slow on actually giving me feedbacks on the page I would send to him, because for me, I didn't want him to receive the book at the end and discover that, oh, it was not actually like this wasn't like that. So as I was going, he was reading the page and giving me feedback, sometimes like 3 weeks afterwards. But yeah, it was important for me that he was there in the process. And I wanted to show, actually, in that book, I was fascinated by kidnapping, because you always identify yourself as someone who's kidnapped, because it can happen to, I mean, he was not a specialist or anything, he was just there at the wrong moment, at the wrong time. And this can happen if you go, I don't know, in Colombia, Philippines, Mexico, and lots of places. And to show how you cope in a situation where you have no control over your life, because that's what he says. Even just to go to the toilets, he had just the time when he was eating, he could go, and that's all. The rest, he had just no control, no decision. So it's like freedom to a level of zero. And how do you survive like that? He had no books, no pencil. I can imagine myself, you know, an hour in a room where there's nothing, then 2 hours, and then 24 hours, you go crazy. So I wanted to describe that. So there's that syndrome that happens at one point where these guys comes in and they give him vodka, and because they have something to celebrate, he doesn't know what's going on, but he just drinks because, you know, vodka, that's something very big in a day where you have nothing to do, and cigarettes. And then he saw himself at one point saying goodnight and thank you. And then he's there in his bed, and he says, what am I saying? Why do I say thank you to these guys? I mean, I'm attached here for weeks now. And so he stops that, and after that, he stops being Mr. Nice Guy, and he just, you know, in his head, he doesn't answer back to them. So that was a good step for him, because he felt much more proud of himself, and he was kind of against them, and that was a good step. I wanted to show all these steps mentally. How do you cope with a situation like that?
It was very effective. I mean, in those scenes when, you know, he's actually brought into the room where there's a TV or whatever, and there's a rifle. I don't know if there's a TV in that room, but when he's running to the living room and there's a rifle close by, and he has this sort of moment where he is wondering, like, should I take it? I really can. And he kind of has this eye contact with the other guy, the tall guy.
Yeah.
The tall guy. And that's really, like, you really feel that little frisson of, like, oh, is he good? But he's not good. Like, you also understand the danger involved in that situation.
Because it's really quick. There's the guy in the kitchen. He's sitting there on a sofa, and there's the Kalashnikov. And then he has all these questions in about 5 seconds, 10 seconds, where if I take it and I'm quick enough, and then can I use a Kalashnikov? Is there a security thing? He's never used a gun. He works in NGO. And then he thinks, could I shoot someone? Like, and this guy is really big. So if I miss, well, I'm going to be in trouble. And then and then the guy saw the gun, and he just paused there thinking, you know, are you going to take it or not? And then he doesn't take it. And he says, actually, the worst part of all that was to try to convince him after that he did the good choice not to take the gun.
Right, right. Because he felt like
maybe that's the last...
That was his only
hope
or something.
Maybe that's going to be the last chance I'm going to have to escape. Yeah. And he was really focusing right from the start to any chance he can have on escaping. Yeah,
yeah, no, it's really interesting because there are several moments where you're like, okay, you know, one night they'd forget to chain him to the radiator, yeah. And that's like his little freedom within that space. So much of it does take place in his mind, his struggle to kind of keep track of the dates, his, yeah. You know, thinking about his sister's wedding, wondering what's happening in the outside world, really trying to push negative thoughts, like which is really interesting, I think, for someone who's in such a dire situation to be like, no, I shouldn't think that they've forgotten about me. No, I should, you know, like he really pushes things, you know, he tries to push us for the positive. The scenes in which he's a military history buff, and the scenes in which he's sort of replaying these epic battles in his mind, Napoleon and the German campaign and the Battle of Gettysburg. Mm-hmm. How did he recount those pieces to you, and what was sort of your approach to how you incorporated that in the book?
Yeah, I was when I was having dinner with him, I remember, and I was asking, so what do you do all day long? What do you think of? And that's what happened when you're there. You have nothing to do, so you have your thoughts and your imagination, and then the thoughts is your family, the stuff you would like to eat when you're back home, and the movies you're going to go see and all that. Then you start to think of your sister, and his sister was getting married 2 weeks after, so he was thinking, well, am I going to be still here? Is she going to cancel the marriage? So then he gets depressed, and that's dangerous. He doesn't want to go into that direction, so he says, well, you know, I'm going to... Okay, he knows all these battles by heart, so he can do La Guerre, he can do the Plan d'Abraham, you know, by heart. And he has these board games where he does all the movements of the troops, the cavalry, so he's really into that. So he says, yeah, okay, now, you know, Germany, 1805, Austerlitz, and they're coming here. And so he can spend like 2 hours just thinking of that and just escape. So it's very interesting for someone like me who works in the narration, do drawings, and then you see this guy with his imagination that he kind of survive somehow because he goes in his thoughts and he just wanders and walks in these plains and then see all these battles. Yeah, that's something that kidnaps people do. I remember reading that French guy who was doing all the Bordeaux area with different type of the wines that you know by heart, just to spend time because you have nothing to do.
Right, right.
And it's the same with the tracking time. They all mm-hmm. do that. They all do in the morning. And tracking time, Christophe was saying to me, it was very important for him because that's the only reference he had. He didn't know where he was, and there's just no reason why he was there, and didn't know how long he would stay, so you go crazy. And your mind needed somewhere where you can, okay, this is the truth. I mean, we're the 15th of August, and tomorrow we're going to be the 16th. And every morning he was doing that, so that was super important. And on top of that, he was sharing with the rest of the world somehow. He was still staying in contact with that because everybody knows that it's the 15th outside of here. Yeah. They all go around doing their life on the 15th of August, and I'm with them somehow, knowing that it's the 15th. Otherwise, I would be completely lost. Yeah,
yeah. Like even when at one point he just takes a picture with the newspaper, I think it is, and that's kind of a marker. Like he would try to figure out, okay, if that was from, you know, how long ago was that from? And
yeah.
Where am I? So he was dying to read the newspaper as well, and it's like, oh, like you just want them to leave it there. But
he was looking for the date, and then when he saw the date, yeah, I got it. He was very happy.
I just want to talk a little bit about sort of your work and what you do. And I was thinking in an interview recently, Joe Sacco was talking about his book and Sarah Glidden's book, Rolling Blackouts, which is also a piece of comics journalism in that sense. Do you see a distinction between comics journalism and the nonfiction that you do? And if you do, can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, so if you take a book like the one that Joe Sacco has done on Palestine, we do talk about the same country, we show ourselves there, and it's a comic book. There's a lot of common points, but when I read Joe Sacco, books that I really like and that inspired me, I feel that I'm doing almost something very different, at least, and almost opposite, because I don't feel myself like a journalist. Joe Sacco is a journalist, and he goes there, and he brings information. He works with archives, the people that are in the archives as well. And me is so different. I just follow my wife. I don't know nothing about the place, actually. And if I have stories to tell, then I'm going to do a book. But I've been in countries where I come back, I read my notes, and not much to say. So, you know, there's no book. A journalist cannot work like that, of course. And on the stuff that I do write and draw, I can talk about my kids, I can talk about like my cars having problems, so like the small everyday life, and then I can explain a few journalistic, it's more a story, like les plans des mosquées. I explained that, the way people work and all the settlements and all that. But yeah, I do feel more like I write a long postcard to my family than being a journalist. And inside of that, of course, there's a few information, but yeah, that's as far as I see me. Not as a journalist, that's for sure. Okay. I have a very high image of what journalists should be.
Thank you. For that in this day and age, that's good to hear, considering what's going on with journalism. Just to sort of get, you know, it's interesting, I read an interview that when you wrote Jerusalem and you wrote Burma Chronicles, you were in those places, but you wrote when you came back. And yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that? Sort of, do you know, in this one, we were writing from the interview, but is that part of your process to kind of have that step back?
Yeah, it was better for me because I tried. I was in Burma after 6 months, and then I thought, well, there's actually some nice stuff that I can do. I'll start while I'm here. And the thing is, if you work a lot, not much happens during daytime, so you have nothing to talk about. And I'm too close to what happens, and I think, oh, this is funny, I'm going to write about that. And actually, a lot of pages that I did while I was in Burma, when I came back and I read, I removed them because they didn't really work. So it's better for me to come back, wait a month or two, and then things have come settled a bit, and then I can see what's interesting. Otherwise, I'm too much close to the what's going on, and while you're there, it's interesting, but for me, afterwards, and for the reader who's not in the situation, it doesn't work. So it's better that I just, you know, go around there, make my life, try to meet people and see how it goes and understand what the country, how the country works, and then I come back and then I work on it.
So I had read that your wife is no longer traveling with MSF. Is that true?
Or yeah, we stopped traveling like that. The kids were a bit too big, and we wouldn't do that all our life because it's you know, you go for a year with backpacks and you have two kids. You know, one backpack is full of toys, and the rest you try to fit in as much as socks you can. So yeah, it's a bit complicated. Yeah.
So what kind of things are you doing now? Like, you know,
well, that's what happened, because now that I've finished these long traveling books, I did a few ones just on everyday life with the children, so the parenting book. And that was the Christophe André. So I said, well, now that I've stopped, either I stop thinking about that story, or I do it. So I spent 2 years working on that book, and yeah, that was the perfect time for me to do it.
Mm. And what's next? What are you working on?
Well, actually, I keep changing my mind every week, and because I'm traveling a lot with that book, there's been translation in Spain, in Italian, and so I go around, do a lot of, I accompany the book with the publishing house, which is very important, especially in this country where comic book is still seen as stuff for children only. So it's nice to go around and do present, you know, the story of someone who's been kidnapped as a hostage. And then, yeah, I'll go back to my working table afterwards, and I'll probably do a few of other parenting stories. Yeah.
And what's that like for you? Were you working on A User's Guide to Neglectful Parenting at the same time that you were doing the other stuff? Or are you like in a frame of mind,
I'm
in
not,
a separate frame of mind?
Yeah, I'm not very good for multitask, because when I work on that, I work in the morning, prepare my page, do the writing, like the sentence. In a page, you don't have much. It's just a comic book, so you have like 5, 6, 7 sentences. And then draw in the afternoon. And it's in my mind all the time. So I go back home, and I know, okay, tomorrow I'm going to work on that. So there's not a lot of place for the rest. Like, I cannot switch to something very funny in the afternoon.
Sure.
Some people can do it, but me, no. I just focus. And so this was like kind of a marathon, because after 300 pages, I was going like, I can't take it anymore. I share a studio with friends. They do comic book as well. So we have a scan that we share as well. And you scan, you leave your paper there, and then your friend come back and give it to you. And then I remember Dominique came to me. I was about that 300 page, and he says, well, it's been a year and a half that I see a guy attached to a radiator. aren't you sick about it? Even he was. So I was just like going, yeah, I just can't take it anymore. And the week after, it's in September, they bring him a shirt. And this was such a good change for me, because, oh, at last, he's going to have a shirt. And then things happens and then it changed. But it was after the 300 pages, it was a long book after 300 pages.
So that's about the point at which the narrative shifts and he's no longer confined. And I won't go into any spoilers about what actually happens, but what was the experience like about writing, you know, the last part of the book versus the first part of the book?
Well, two things. I had to finish the book, so I had to go fast. And the last part is going fast, so it was like a marathon. And then for the last 2 months, it was like a sprint to do very fast. But the ending, yeah, he goes outside, so you know, that's it. You don't have to draw a light bulb and in just a corner. Well, I knew where I was going, starting from the start, starting from the. What I had with Christophe, I knew it would be a very minimalistic story, but there was like a little suspense that I had to keep. That was the balance to find a narration where the reader, I want the reader to turn the page, even though it's like a very slow pace, but you know, so that was the balance to find.
Yeah, as I was mentioning to you earlier, the whole book is very absorbing and you really feel like you're in his space, but the end of it, it's such like a, there's a relief and there's like this emotion that sort of comes over. And but it was interesting to me that you said that when he was talking about it, he was very somewhat detached from it in terms of that. Did you notice any shift in terms of, like, was it the ending something that it was just, was that, did he have that emotional sort of conversation, or was it really
no
sort of telling from,
not so much, because he has told that story so much to his parents, family,
of
and
course,
all that,
yeah,
and people from the NGO, and then when he came back to MSF, he has told that story to everybody, and then to me when I saw him
sure.
the first time. So he knows all the details, but it's been a long time. But it was good for his family, who's been through that experience, as you can imagine, with a lot of stress, to have a son. It was his first mission. After 3 months, he gets kidnapped. Like,
poor guy. I mean, the whole part of it in the beginning, when he thinks he's getting kidnapped for the money in the safe, keys, and you know, you're just as in the dark as he is, what the motives are and what it is. But thank you so much, Guy. I want to open things up to questions to give people some time to ask questions. Is there a mic up here? Or just speak loudly if you've got any questions.
I noticed there's a stylistic change as well.
Yeah.
From your early minimalism, I didn't think he's old, and why did you choose to change the style as well?
Well, it's not really a choice. It's just like the story, there's no humor, so I didn't want to have something. When I do the Burmese or the Jerusalem, there's like a cartoon side to the drawing, which makes it fun. And it's kind of a fun book to do as well. But Christophe, there is no humor really in the book, and it's more serious. So I felt more like when I do sketch of buildings, when I go outside and I sketch, except this was based on human figure. So I worked on this on flying papers, photocopy paper. I don't have like a finished page. I just have like a box full of drawings that I was scanning at the end of the day and put all that together, like kind of a montage. And that's the way, because I want to have like a sketchy kind of feeling line, almost like trembling, because he's kind of in a situation who's not, you know, it's very dangerous. And keep it simple, because the story is very simple. So a very simple line, just one color was enough for me. And he was saying to me that he was in the dark all the time, because the window was shutter. So it was like a dark gray to a pale gray. So he knew he would be in the afternoon or in the morning, but that's all. So, and I knew it would be a long book. So I cannot do watercolor or complicated stuff like that. Otherwise, I would still work on it. I need to do one page a day, because that takes, just with that, it takes me 2 years. So you have to think about that when you know that's going to be a long book.
And you did the coloration yourself on it as well?
Yeah, it's on the computer. Yeah, I scan. I do drawing on paper, I scan. And after that, I do on the computer. Yeah, much faster too.
I'm wondering if you could talk about how Joe Sacco's work has influenced
you? I've read Joe Sacco quite late, but it's been an inspiration, because he's a journalist. He goes there, and he's the first one who started doing that, to use his like comic book as a tool. for journalists, which usually it's not taken seriously, like cartoon and journalists, it's almost opposite. But yeah, he does it in a way that people have learned so much about Palestine and to Gorajde and all these great books. But then, yeah, as an influence for me, it's very different. Like, I don't see myself as Joe Sacco when I'm in there, and I certainly don't feel as a journalist. So I've been inspired by his book, but just in a way that, wow, it's great that you can do that in comic books, and we can do all sorts of things that we haven't explored yet. So in that sense, that has inspired me. Yes.
Despite the fact that it's a very heavy subject, there's many like funny moments in the book. Did that come from Christoph telling the story to you, or did you kind of wanted to put those lighter moments to not make it such a heavy book?
Yeah. Yeah, people told me there's humor in that book. I guess there's a little bit of me that comes in the character. Even though when I record Christoph, he did that that scene where one day there's like a young guy who comes and bring him the food, and that's the first time. So he's imagining that they probably are going away for the weekend, and then he was doing the conversation of these guys saying, "Well, can you feed the hostage this weekend because we're going away?" And yeah, sure. What does he eat and all that? And so I have that on a recording, and I just translate that in the book. But I'm not sure that. Even though he says humor is very important while you're there, I don't know if he did a lot of humor, because when you're on your own like that, you know, you don't tell jokes to yourself. But yeah, that's in the book. Somehow it's a bit of me, and this is taken from the conversation we had together as well. Yeah, they will never know the answer. The most, Chechnya has a tradition of kidnapping among clans, among families. So when you have a foreigner, that's a lot of money. So these guys were just like mafia people trying to get a quick buck. Well, $1 million is a lot of money, I guess, for a family, Chechenian family. He was maybe someone from the NGO gave the information that he was alone this night, but that's not sure. They don't know, but that's it's a possibility. But other than that, when they left, they didn't try to go on trial or trying to get to know who these people were, because it's dangerous to be a foreigner there. So they just left very quickly after they got Christoph back, because they had people all around the place, even in Grozny, where it was dangerous. MSF got people there in case Christoph showed up, and that was dangerous. He could have been kidnapped as well. So when Christoph was out, they just shut down everything very quickly in case that these people come back as well. So yeah, they're never going to know who these people are exactly and why. Well, it's probably just for the money anyhow. It was not politic.
Have you met Aslan and Zofra yourself?
Yeah, I had the chance. Aslan actually wrote to me by email, and then he was passing by in my hometown, and I got a long discussion with him. It was great, yeah, because he helped Christoph, because he looked so in such a bad shape when he found him on the street that he decided to help him. He knew what happened. Like, I don't know, I guess these things happened there, so he knew what happened to him. And that's what Christoph says. He was kidnapped by a Chechenian, but he was saved by a Chechenian as well. And like he says, whenever it's like that Oriental tradition of having someone in your house where you're going to help him, you're going to feed him, and they go to the extent where they were in danger because people knew that it was them that helped, and they were actually not only threat, but he got shot. So. And then he asked France for... then he ran away, and he was in Ukraine to hide for a long time. He came back, and his head was... He was wanted. Because now the government is actually the family, like the wrong family for him in power. So that's not good in Chechnya for him. So he asked France to be a refugee. And Doctors Without Borders and Christophe, they did interfere. Well, interfere. They did help for his case. And now he's in France. He's 45 years old. He has 4 kids, and he's actually planning to move to Canada. Yeah.
That's so great. We could take a few, one or two more questions. Yeah, in the back, and then we'll come.
If you could look back at the last year and pick an event or an inspiration for another book, what would you go for?
You mean an event?
Yeah, anything around the world.
Oh, remember? Well, I don't do books really on memories. It's more on traveling that I do. So if I would choose like a country I can go, I'd like to go in Japan like everybody. But NGOs don't go in Japan so much. So yeah, and there's probably a lot of books that do talks about Japan, so that wouldn't be very original. So I don't know. Yeah, Japan, I'd like to go there, but there's so many countries. Well, South Africa would be interesting to describe and kind of go back to the story, what they've been through. I have a few friends there that do comics that you know, insist that I should come. But it's a long process. I have to go spend a year and then take notes and come back. And then I never know. Sometimes I can just spend a year there and there's, I don't know, not much to say. That's not going to be for the moment. Yeah.
I was wondering if you've ever done or are interested in doing fictional comics, not necessarily fantastical like typical comics, but historical or
yeah, fictional. Sometimes I have ideas like that, but the thing that excites me more is when it's based on real life somehow, because that Christophe story, if it would be a fiction, you know, that would be a very, very different kind of approach. Yeah, sometimes I have ideas, but right now I'd like to work maybe on a biography of like a famous or not so famous person, scientist, poet, and I'd like to work on that. I'm not so sure exactly who, but I have a few ideas. So it would still be based on reality.
All right, well, thank you. I know they have to get things ready for the next session, but thank you so much, Guy, for that great conversation, and thank you all for coming out. Just to let you know, Guy will be back to signing books at the Drawdon Quarterly booth, which I believe is 150, back at the Reference Library. Is that right?
Well, I go right now.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, it's 2:15, so you have time to get over there.
All right, 2:30.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So he will be headed over there now. So if you want to get him to sign your book, say hi again, you can meet him there. And thank you guys so much for coming out.
Thank you.